Support for The Morning Show comes from the Carthage College Office of Continuing Studies, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. Convenient evening and summer courses are designed for the working adult. More information is available at carthage.edu/grad. Support also comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, a unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe, Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. And we welcome you to the Friday Morning Show on WGTD-HD, your gateway to public radio. I'm Gregory Berg. We have a very busy Friday morning show, and I'm delighted that it begins with Mike Goodbar, who has been on the morning show several times before this. Mike is a very talented bass player, and he is especially adept at playing jazz, and he has overseen several different jazz concerts that have been presented as part of Fine Arts at First at First United Methodist Church here in Kenosha. And Mike is once again putting together a program that sounds absolutely delightful called Jazz for All Seasons, a program that is going to feature various jazz songs that in one way or another touch on the four seasons of the year. It's a great idea for a program theme, and that concert will be coming up Sunday afternoon at
3 o'clock.
And Mike Goodbar, we welcome you back to the morning show.
Thanks, Greg. It's great to be here.
Well, and it's great for you to be here in a couple of different respects, isn't it? I didn't realize until we started setting this interview up that, in fact, you have relocated, you and your family, and no longer live here in southeastern Wisconsin. Tell us about that relocation.
That's true. The company I work for, what we jazz musicians call our day gig, is relocated its headquarters down to Charlotte, North Carolina. So I was compelled to move down there, and it's still going through a period of adjustment down there, and but it's great to have this little homecoming.
Right. So I suppose this concert was already on the calendar and something you had already committed to do. I suppose one option would have been to try to hand this off to somebody, but I should think, on the other hand, that's something you would not have felt very good about doing.
No, yeah. As you pointed out, I already had made the commitment to do it, and I wanted to follow through on that. And I also feel it's a great way to keep in touch with the music scene back here and all my friends who are kind enough to play with me on this concert.
Right. You were saying that one of the points of adjustment for you, in addition to everything that is always a point of adjustment when you relocate, especially to a different part of the country, but is that whole factor of music making and the fact that you are still sort of in that period of searching out opportunities where you get to dust off your bass. And I suppose that's one more reason why you're glad to be back.
Right. Gives me the opportunity to play. I just hope I'm not too rusty to pull it off.
Yeah. So when the decision was made that this Fine Arts at First season would end with jazz, whose responsibility was it to sort of come up with some sort of framework? I mean, is it usually you or Jessica or somebody else or some committee that kind of comes up with what the focus will be?
No, I usually come up with a couple of different ideas, and I discuss them with Jessica. We had a couple of germs of ideas floating around, but we decided this one would be a good one. We had first thought that just focusing on the springtime aspect of it would be good. There's literally dozens and dozens of songs having to do with spring in the repertoire, but we thought, well, why limit it to just springtime? Why not take it through the entire year?
Mm-hmm. So is it up to you then? I mean, are you the one who kind of went through the drawers and the folders and, you know, trying to find stuff?
Right, yeah. I just kind of started with going through a checklist in my memory of songs that I knew, and then kind of delving into the repertoire, looking at album jackets, going through lists of tunes in various jazz books that I have, and kind of narrowing it down from there.
Mm-hmm. So tell us what you end up with in terms of a lineup of repertoire? And did you end up with many more possibilities than you could possibly fit into one program?
Oh, absolutely. There are hundreds and hundreds of really great tunes, so it was kind of a difficult task to whittle them down to the dozen or so that the time allows.
Okay. Well, tell us something about what will be played and sung.
Well, Summertime by George Gershwin seemed to be a natural one. I'm going to actually just go progressively starting at summer and ending at spring for the program.
Sure.
So Summertime is a great tune that almost every jazz musician knows, which is an advantage because it doesn't take a lot of prep time with the rest of the crew. And it's another great song because it can be done in so many different ways and still sound great. It can be done as a very slow, bluesy lullaby or an up-tempo, exciting tune, which is kind of the way we're going to do it.
So this is as good a time as any to ask, are these sort of pre-designed arrangements that are being played, or are you kind of putting this together, you yourselves? I mean, concocting, in a sense, an arrangement that's never been heard before and presumably not even really written down.
Well, my shows are kind of a mix of both. The ones that I've done have been a mixture of the two. I like to have some very set arrangements, of course, with room for improvisation. But I also like to have that opportunity for the musicians just to open up and improvise at will, too, at more of a of an open situation.
So how will Summertime, for instance, be done?
That will be more of an arranged version, and that will also include a vocal by Susan Crawford, along with, I think, and that'll be a, when that'll be the show opener, and it'll be a chance for everyone just to take a chorus and just you know, introduce their own musical ideas.
Strut their stuff.
Exactly.
Very good. So what else do you have to offer for Summertime?
A song called The Summer Knows by Michel Legrand. And you may know Michel Legrand. He's composed many different movie themes.
All right.
Brian's song, Windmills of Your Mind. But this is a very beautiful song, The Summer Knows. It was from the movie called The Summer of 42. Oh. And it lends itself, again, as a ballad. We're going to do it more as a bossa nova, I think.
Oh, okay.
So. And that will be kind of a loose arrangement, let's say.
Anything else for summer?
Too Darn Hot, the old Cole Porter tune from Kiss Me, Kate. Ella Fitzgerald does a great version of that, and we're going to try to emulate that a little bit. And again, Susan Crawford will be doing the vocal on that.
Very good. I guess we move from summertime to autumn.
Correct. We can't do a jazz concert without Autumn Leaves. That's another great song that is in almost every jazz musician's repertoire. And it's one of the most often recorded tunes in the jazz repertoire. So we'll add our little version of it. And that will be more of a just a solely improvised rendition rather than a tight arrangement.
Now, is that the song, Autumn Leaves?
Right. Correct, yes.
I'm trying to picture that in an improvised sort of jazz performance.
Well, it's, again, it can be done any number of tempos. We're going to take it kind of an up-tempo swinger. And the nice thing about that tune, if from a musical theory point of view, it's fun to improvise on because it just kind of goes through this what we call the circle of fifths. Harmonically, it starts at one point and kind of winds down to the tonic, which is a fun kind of framework to improvise on.
Right. It gives you a good avenue to go. What else for autumn?
Autumn Nocturne, which is kind of a seldom played tune, is done originally by the old Claude Thornhill Orchestra back in 1941. There's been a few renditions done by Sonny Rollins and more recently the vocalist Cassandra Wilson. I'm going to feature Tim Bell on clarinet on that tune because the melody's kind of very limber, goes all over the place, and I think that lends itself great to the clarinet.
Very good. Where do we go?
Autumn in New York. So that's that old Vernon Duke tune from the Broadway musical Thumbs Up. But I don't. The song is remembered long after the musical, I think.
Yeah.
So, and again, it's one of those tunes that is done by almost everyone in the jazz, you know, Jazz World. Mm-hmm. One of those necessary tunes that you do a rendition of.
Very good. So is it time for winter?
It is. The challenge for this was not to do Christmas tunes. I wanted to do songs that aren't strictly associated with Christmas or have the word Christmas in the title. Like, you know, Mel Torme's is the Christmas song would be one I wanted to avoid. So,
right. I could see musically it would lend itself well. But yeah,
it's a beautiful song. But again, it was kind of a compromise to get away from that Christmas theme.
Right.
So what I found was a tune called Skating by Vince Guaraldi. And you might remember it from it's actually from the Charlie Brown Christmas special, but it's a very nice melody. It's very evocative of skating. And that will feature our pianist Brian Harris on that.
Right. And I think now I know what you're thinking. So it has that kind of rolling.
Yeah, it's in 3/4 time. So you really picture, you know, skaters on the ice when you hear it.
Right. Oh, that's a neat idea.
Yeah.
Good for you.
Next is I've Got My Love to Keep Me Warm, which is an Irving Berlin tune.
Right.
So it's... it tells a little story in the lyrics. Sue will be singing that one as well. And again, it's just one of those songs I was able to find that doesn't mention Christmas specifically, but has a more of a winter theme.
Right. So. And is that for winter?
We've also got Baby, It's Cold Outside. Mm. So that's probably the most closely associated in the past few years, at least, with the Christmas repertoire.
Right.
But again, doesn't mention Christmas specifically, and it's just a fun tune to do.
Right, and it is going to be a chilly weekend, so
right,
that fits the day. And then finally, you'll end with springtime, and I guess that works out really nicely, doesn't it?
Right, bring it on back to this. Maybe, yeah, hopefully, bring a little reminder of spring if it's not like that out in the weather. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, for spring, we're going to do. It Might As Well Be Spring.
Mm, from State Fair.
Exactly, yeah, the Rodgers and Hammerstein tune. Again, one of the tunes that can be done in any number of ways, and I'm going to have a little fun with it, doing it maybe as more of an up-tempo samba. So not done often like that.
Right.
So, and then we're going to move to maybe a little somber, maybe it'll fit the weather a little better. It's called Spring Can Really Hang You Up the Most.
Mm.
It's really kind of a virtuosic jazz tune, not played very often, but it's kind of a play on words from the T.S. Eliot poem, Four Quartets, when he opens, April is the cruelest month.
Mm.
Spring can really hang you up the most. The lyrics have to do with, of course, lost love. In the time when everyone else is finding it.
Right, so, yeah. It feels even worse when you're feeling sad in the
right.
middle of...
But it's a lovely tune, and Sue, I'm sure, is going to do a great job on it.
Mm-hmm. So. And how does the program end?
Finally, with a real jazz tune by a jazz musician named Freddie Hubbard, famous trumpet player. It's called Up Jump Spring.
Mm.
It's another three-quarter time tune, and it just has a very ebullient melody and, again, very evocative of the hopefulness and optimism that spring kind of brings to mind.
Very good. You were saying that that once again you've gathered essentially the same forces who have performed these jazz concerts before for Fine Arts at First, namely a septet of some of the most talented jazz musicians here in the area. Why don't you introduce them?
Yeah, these guys are just like the top-notch guys in the area, and some of them I've known for literally decades. And I know that for this kind of a thing, where I'm especially this year when I'm coming in from out of town, and I can just throw things in front of them with very little rehearsal, they can pull it off with no problem at all. We'll start with trumpet, Mr. Tom Meredith, kind of a legend in the area.
For sure.
He's just a great trumpet player, all-around trumpet player, plays great lead trumpet, can play the high notes, but also is a very accomplished improviser as well. Trombone is Ken Wheely Jr., a younger guy, the youngest guy in the group, definitely, but just plays so much trombone and has some great ideas and, when he improvises.
So this is the son of the teacher?
Correct, yes, correct. Mm-hmm. Alto saxophone and clarinet will be Tim Bell, the mentor to so many of the jazz musicians in this area, including many of them in the group. And then finally on tenor saxophone will be Steve Jacob, one of my oldest friends in the area, and again, just someone who can play in any style, make it sound authentic, and is a very enthusiastic member of the group.
Mm-hmm.
On piano, Brian Harris, incredibly versatile piano player. He was one of the people who got me going into this this direction of doing this concert, because my first show was the Dave Brubeck tribute.
Oh yeah,
and that came from playing with Brian Harris and hearing that he could play all those Dave Brubeck tunes so well. I said, well, why not showcase that? So Brian is a great jazz player. He plays classical. We've done jazz renditions of Chopin etudes, and he also is very successful lately as doing an Elton John tribute, a Steely Dan tribute, and so he's just got it all in terms of he's a great vocalist too. Unfortunately, he won't be showcasing his vocals this time, but great piano player. Finally, on drums will be Paul Griffin. Again, just one of my oldest friends in the area, and an incredibly versatile drummer who I can basically just talk through a form and he'll get it perfectly the first time.
So. Then what about the singer?
Susan Crawford, again, another one of my oldest musical associates. She and her husband, John, have been two of my friends that I've played with for many, many years. And Sue has taken on some new repertoire for this, and I think she's just going to do an awesome job.
Mm. So help us understand kind of the process by which this actually gets put together beyond the choosing of music and so on. I mean, ahead of whatever practices are going to occur now in the next couple of days, because I know you just got back to town.
Correct,
from
yes.
North Carolina. Ahead of that, has much discussion gone on about how these pieces are going to be done, or are you just going to show up all musicians in one room and make this happen, sort this out?
Well, it kind of works like that. I'll throw out tunes to the guys, ask them what keys might work better for them. I let them know what the tempos are going to be, what they can kind of expect when they get the charts. In some cases, I'll get some charts to them ahead of time. A lot of times I'm working on them right up to the last minute. But they always make them sound great. And then, yeah, finally, the final rehearsal is actually the morning of the concert, because getting seven guys together in one room, especially guys who are as busy as this, is very difficult.
Right.
But as I said, these guys are so experienced and can just come in and read these charts down and even let me know if there's a mistake in the chart.
Wow.
and it'll sound great.
What kind of a room is this for doing jazz?
It's a little tough. Playing in churches with, they normally have great acoustics for vocals, for some instrumentals. You put a set of drums in a large echoey place and that can be challenging. So as far as I have a guy come in, a very accomplished sound engineer, and he just basically leaves the drums alone as far as amplification and makes sure that everything else kind of matches the level of the drums. So I think it usually ends up sounding pretty good in there. So.
Absolutely. Well, these have always been super, super well received, and I'm sure Sunday is going to be no exception. Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock at First United Methodist Church, was at the corner of Sheridan Road and 60th Street, a program put together by Mike Goodbar called Jazz for All Seasons, featuring a number of his very, very best friends and some of the best jazz musicians here in southeastern Wisconsin. This concert, as all Fine Arts at First presentations, is free and open to the public. Mike Goodbar, I'm sad you live in North Carolina, but glad you had this reason to come back home, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And we wish you and all of your musicians a very, very successful concert on Sunday afternoon. And thanks
for
being
here.
Mike Goodbar, the organizer of Sunday afternoon's concert called Jazz for All Seasons at First United Methodist Church for their Fine Arts at First series. For part two of today's program, we'll hear from one of the soloists for this weekend's concert of the Lake Geneva Symphony Orchestra. That's a concert Saturday evening. And part three will follow after that as we meet an outstanding graduate from the University of Wisconsin-Parkside. This is The Morning Show on WGTD. The time is 8:31. And now I'm pleased to speak with the violinist who will be joining violist Li Kuo-Chang in the performance of Mozart's Sinfonia Concertante with the Lake Geneva Symphony. Her name is Rong Yang Tong, and she is a violinist with the Chicago Symphony Orchestra and has had a very distinguished career, both orchestrally and in chamber music as well. And she will be one half of the solo spotlight for this weekend's concert. And I'm very honored to be speaking with her for the next few minutes. Rong Yang Tong, we welcome you to The Morning Show.
Thank you very much.
Really happy to be talking with you. Can you just in brief explain your own life's journey from where you grew up to where you live now?
Well, it's a long journey. I grew up in Shanghai, and it's a complicated situation. My parents live in Qingdao, where the beer town, very famous Chinese beer, came from. And then they sent me to Shanghai Conservatory preschool when I was 9. And then I have to get into the primary school later and studied there from 9 until 19. I had middle school and high school. And then I came to America, first went to Louisiana State, studied with Camilla Weeks, very famous violinist in the past, and she's an amazing teacher. And then I transferred to Cleveland Institute of Music for bachelor and master's with Don Weilerston, who was the first violinist of Cleveland Quartet. And then I played in a quartet. I joined a quartet for 3 years and lived in a very, very small town called Hickory in North Carolina. And then I decided to change career for orchestra, and I eventually ended in Chicago.
Hmm.
So, long journey.
Yes, and of course, that's one of the great symphonies in all the world. As we look at your biography, it makes prominent mention of one of the great legends of the 20th century, namely Isaac Stern. Can you say a quick word about your connection with Mr. Stern?
Yeah, it was a very lucky opportunity that we found out that he was hosting a chamber music convention in Jerusalem, Israel, when I was in the quartet. So we thought, wouldn't that be wonderful to get coached by Isaac Stern and also many other giants that he invited, and also going to Jerusalem? So we auditioned with our tape, and they picked 10 groups, young groups, and then I met him there. And then we had an immediate connection at a masterclass. That first time we had a masterclass, he likes to ask things back and forth. And then we just had a great connection, and he liked us, and he liked me very much, and he helped me actually even for my visa coming back here. It was very kind of him. And then we get chance to be invited to play at the Carnegie Hall by him. And then also we went to his house in Connecticut to get a 3-hour coaching. It was very, very generous of him.
Wow.
And then also at the time, you know, when you play in the quartet, you're young, you have no money. I had a very limited, like not a very good violin at the time, and he was frustrated with that. So he offered to lend me his own violin for a period of time until he passed away.
Wow.
So I had this amazing connection, and I had heard about him because, you know, he did this amazing trip, made a movie called From Moe to Mozart. Very, very famous. I think they won Grammy. And he opened the door from America to China when China just was over with the Cultural Revolution. So that movie was, actually, I recommend anyone to watch. It's amazing.
Oh, I've seen it, and it's thrilling. And how marvelous that your paths crossed as they did.
Exactly. So when he went there, I was still a baby, so I didn't know anything, but I have been hearing his name. He's like the god.
Yes, absolutely.
So when I saw him, I really didn't know what to do with all, you know, but somehow he was so kind and very generous and very caring. So I was very lucky to have met him at the end of, like, towards his life. Yeah.
Terrific. Yeah. So you performed this weekend in Lake Geneva in this Mozart Sinfonia Concertante, surely the greatest work ever composed for a violin, viola, and orchestra. You perform with your orchestral colleague, Li Kuo Chang. Do the two of you perform together a great deal? I mean, I'm just kind of curious about how the invitation came to the two of you to perform this work together. And is it something you have performed before on other occasions?
You know, I play this piece many times with cellists and other violists in the orchestra, but never played with him. But I have played chamber music with him, like quartet, many times. And I always really enjoyed playing with him. It's very musical experience, and it's fun to work with. So I think he was invited by the orchestra first, and he needed to find a violinist, and he thought of me, and I was very lucky. So it's a great, great opportunity.
Talk for a moment about how challenging it is to put this piece together. First of all, I assume that the two of you have done a fair amount of rehearsing of it together, just the two of you, although correct me if I'm wrong, and then the matter of putting the two of you together with the orchestra. I mean, that's a tricky enough matter when it's simply a single soloist with orchestra, but talk about the added challenge that I think is in place when we're talking about two soloists, each with their own ideas, and an orchestra, and a conductor, and somehow this must all go together.
Well, I mean, thanks to both of our experience, we have both played in the orchestra. Well, I have been here for like almost 14 years playing with a major orchestra, and he has been here longer. I think after doing that for so many years, it became kind of automatic that you are playing with many, many people and with many, many parts. So it's challenging, but it also is not... it's not something uncomfortable. So actually we did rehearse, but we didn't like rehearse like crazy. I think if I was younger, if I was in school, this would be a real challenge. It would be very overwhelmed with all the things back and forth. Your own part that's hard, and then you have to listen to the other soloist, and then you have to make sure everything fits with the orchestra, and there's so much freedom as well. But somehow it became like this very enjoyable. It's almost like a party for me to play with Li Kuo, because he's so experienced and he's so musical and he offers many great suggestions. So when we rehearse, instead of like working progress, it's more like drinking and party for us, because it's so much fun. It's very creative, and the music's so beautiful at the time. Even we're playing ourselves, where you're also listening, so you're like drunk almost by its beauty. It's a little corny, but it's true, because when we're rehearsing, we were so excited. We keep saying, oh my God, this is so much fun. It's so great. So actually, yeah, I mean, it's difficult in a way, but it's not like you're figuring things out as it goes. But it's always like a discovery, like, oh my gosh, there's something here, and then we could do this, and then the orchestra is going to do that, and we could play this way. So it's like exciting, and then, you know, and also because it's an amazing piece of work. So when I practice, I was excited about it. But then when I play with Li Kuo, he adds so much coloring, and, you know, there's a conversational thing, there are harmony, then it makes it prettier. Is more beautiful, and you're actually more inspired to play in a more express way. And then actually once we join with the orchestra on Thursday, we're going to have our first rehearsal. I think it will be even more fun.
Rangyung Teng is the violinist who is going to be sharing the spotlight with Li Kuo Chang in this performance of Mozart's beautiful Sinfonia Concertante. You can go to LakeGenevaSymphony.org for more information about Saturday night's concert, which is at 7:30 p.m. My thanks again to violinist Rongyan Teng, who is a violinist with the Chicago Symphony Orchestra and soloing tomorrow night with the Lake Geneva Symphony Orchestra in Mozart's Sinfonia Concertante, a concert which will also feature Franz Liszt's Les Préludes, Rachmaninoff's Vocalise, and the Triumphal March and Ballet from Giuseppe Verdi's opera Aida. The website for the Lake Geneva Symphony is lakegenevaorchestra.org, and their phone number is 262-359-9072. Saturday night's concert will be at Calvary Community Church in Williams Bay. For part three of today's morning show here on WGTD, we finish out the week by speaking... I'm blanking on your last name, Tyler.
Farrell.
Farrell. Okay. Sorry. A couple other names just popped in my head for a moment. Sorry about that. Tyler Farrell. And he's very famous, so I shouldn't be forgetting his last name. Tyler Farrell is about to graduate from the University of Wisconsin Parkside. And he not only graduates proudly with a degree in a double major of geography and economics, but also... as the winner of the most recent Chancellor's Award at the University of Wisconsin-Parkside, essentially awarded to the outstanding graduate of the new class, someone who has been exemplary not only in the classroom, but also outside of the classroom as well, as a real leader of the Parkside community, a real mover and shaker of events there, and the kind of student that all colleges want to have and want to have more of. And Tyler Farrell is in the studios with us to talk a little bit about his experience at the University of Wisconsin-Parkside and what he is hoping to do from here. Tyler Farrell, 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 Farrell. I'll never forget that name again. We welcome you to the morning show.
Thank you. Well, thank you for having me.
So glad you're here. You are from... close by, although not right here in Kenosha, I don't think. Tell us exactly where you grew up and where you went to school before Parkside.
Yep. So I'm just out in the county, about 25 minutes out there in Bristol, Wisconsin. And I went to high school at Westosha Central High School out in the county.
Mm-hmm. And what in particular led you to pursue a college degree at UW Parkside? What did you see at Parkside that made sense for you?
Well, and so I guess it almost starts with both my parents going to Parkside. Both my parents are graduates of Parkside, and I think that was kind of the initial steps of the familiarity of the whole Parkside education. And I think that was one of the very first steps that led me to go. I always say that I went to Parkside for kind of, you know, superficial reasons of closeness to home and money and stuff like that. But then I always say that I stayed at Parkside for much better reasons. you know, the students that are there, the professors that are there, just the campus in general and how it feels more like a community instead of just a college, you know, somewhere where you go and just take your classes and get out of Dodge. But it's more of a community where you go and you meet people and you talk with professors and you learn, you know, you actually learn something.
of course, back when your parents went to Parkside, I'm pretty sure there were no dorms whatsoever. I don't think anybody lived at Parkside, and now some students do. Did you live at Parkside, or did you commute from home?
Yeah, I never lived there. I commuted from home all mm-hmm. 4 years. So
I think in some ways that makes it even more commendable that you have been the kind of student that you are, because I find from, at least at Carthage, where I teach music, that it is sometimes a real challenge for commuters to make themselves part of the community in the same way that their colleagues are, who actually live there and are there all the time. And it's so tempting for a commuter the moment a class is done, sometimes even before their last class is done, to just walk straight out of the classroom, right out to their car, and drive back home, and mm-hmm. only be on campus those few minutes that they're actually in class. It sounds like you didn't do that at all.
Yeah, and I know exactly what you're talking about, and that hit me some days. You know, some days I would kind of just walk right out. But really, the amount of activities that we have planned, the amount of organizations and jobs I was involved with when I was there really kept me there and kept me cemented in. Mm-hmm. So,
talk for a moment about the choice you made to do these double majors, fields of geography and economics. What in particular drew you to them?
So I was an undecided. I was a undecided major for about my first 2 years of college, and then I took one particular class. It was physical geography and the environment with Professor Ward, and that's probably my favorite class I've ever taken in college. And it just basically brings you through, you know, the earth and earth processes and you know, kind of where everything is going on. And that class really brought me into that geography major. I took that one, and I took a couple other world regions with Professor French, and then so on and so forth. And I just fell in love with the major. I fell in love with the professors. Kind of the exact same story with economics. I started off, my very first econ class was basically, it's called the American Economy, and it was for non-majors. But then after that one, then I took a Principles of Microeconomics, fell in love with that, fell in love with the professors. And it's kind of the same story happened again, where I just was, I was drawn to these two disciplines. I would say both of them have such application to everyday life. You know, almost every decision we make on a daily basis has some sort of economic context. And then you're always thinking of where, you know, and that's the main question of geography, you know, where things are located, where you're going. And both of these disciplines, I feel, are so applicable, and I love them both, honestly. Mm.
It sounds like you do. Have you had many moments where you regretted the whole double major thing? I mean, just what that gauntlet represents academically?
No, honestly not. I don't think I've ever regretted it. It has certainly kept me busy, though. I will say that my last few semesters have all been, you know, extremely full load, 18 credit semesters trying to finish up. So it has kept me busy for sure.
Mm. You mentioned that in addition to those two majors, you have something that's related to geography that amounts to a minor in GIS. Explain what GIS is.
So GIS stands for Geographic Information Systems, and basically it's a computer mapping program where you can collect, analyze, store, maintain, and then finally create some sort of output with this geographic data. And with that GIS, I've actually, this semester, been involved in two different internships that are both related to GIS. I was actually working with Racine County Economic Development Corporation, doing GIS stuff for them. And then currently, I'm actually working for General Mitchell Airport and doing GIS stuff for them. We're actually doing a lot of data collection for the airport, and we're pretty much going around mapping all the vents. We're doing a bunch of HVAC stuff for the airport, so we're matching vents, supply vent, return vent, and then like thermostats, stuff like that. And we're putting all of this stuff basically into it, you know, this giant database, pretty much. And this GIS then can organize it and give everything an actual location and a physical location. So
like every cubic inch of the airport, it sounds like.
Yeah. And we basically have a floor plan. We have a very detailed floor plan of the airport, and then we're able to just, you know, make a spot here, make a spot here, and then if you wanted to, you can zoom out on that and look at the entire world, and then you'd be like, oh, look at those little few dots. That's, you know, that's General Mitchell right there. So,
wow.
So each of the points, each of the data points has a, you know, a geographic reference to it. So
I suppose, I mean, to an amateur, even just an architectural sketch of, let's say, the main terminal building would seem like an incredibly detailed thing. This is far more detailed than that.
I mean, you could make the argument. Yeah. And it just kind of delves to another level, perhaps,
right.
You know, another spatial level, I'd say.
Right.
So.
Now, is that the kind of thing you hope to do with these majors, or are you hoping to teach, or what are you thinking about?
So it's kind of a funny story, and this is where I branch into many different areas. So I do have those two majors and the minor, which is a perfect combination for either going into a GIS position, some sort of a GIS specialist position, or teaching. And those have been very high on my list. But then total curveball, actually, from left field, what I'm currently pursuing is actually a job with the Kenosha County Sheriff's Department. And going through the process of becoming a sheriff's deputy and then also a corrections officer is actually the most current job I'm applying for and going through. And this actually comes from something that has been before college, before high school. I actually joined a program, if you will, the Kenosha County Sheriff Explorer Post.
Oh, yeah.
And I've actually been in that since eighth grade. So I've been doing that for 8 years now. And that has really influenced me to actually pursue this career in law enforcement, funny enough.
Yeah.
And a very stark contrast, I'd say, from my two majors. So.
Right. So do you have any regrets about that? I mean, Or does this feel very natural, like this is the way it was supposed to be, that for 4 years at Parkside you were supposed to study this stuff, but then once you're done at Parkside you're going to do this other thing that, at least on the surface, doesn't seem to have a whole lot to do with the studies? How do you sort of put that together in your mind?
Yeah, I definitely wouldn't say any regrets about it. If you were to say, like, oh, you know, do you regret not, you know, doing criminal justice major or something like that? I wouldn't say no, not at all, no regrets on that. And kind of, I guess, kind of putting it together, like I was saying, you know, I mean, economics and geography, you could branch it into anything, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And no matter what I do, the education at Parkside, though, those 4 years, I mean, I could have done anything. You know, I could have majored in anything. But it's the experience that you get and the knowledge that you obtain, you know, not just course-specific knowledge, but just, you know, general knowledge and general experience and kind of a general, you know, growing up, if you will, you know, and maturing even past, you know, kind of those high school ages.
Sure.
And really come into an adulthood and be at a university that really helps with that and really helps you.
My sense is that one of the most important things that one should learn at college, not that everybody manages to, I'm sure you have, is you learn to take learning to another level. I mean, you become a much better learner. And then whatever it is you do after college, you are just primed to learn whatever it is that you're going to have to learn.
Because
exactly. You learn what kind of a learner you are, and you learn what it takes to explore any kind of field or endeavor, and it sounds like you have mastered that in just about every respect. We, of course, read a lot about how the university system in Wisconsin has been really assailed by what sure seemed from the outside to look like really brutal budget cuts and so on. I mean, it's a very, very sobering time for that proud university system. As you were going to Parkside, do you feel like you felt any of that? I mean, were there ways in which you felt like in any way you speak so glowingly about your experience at Parkside and rightly so, but do you feel like there were any ways in which you sort of felt that, you and your students, the reverberations of that harsh reality?
I feel like I personally haven't felt it. I mean, truthfully, and And honestly, yeah, I feel like that's actually kind of all I really have to say about that. I really honestly don't feel like I've felt much reverberations from all that stuff. And that might just be I don't want to say like an ignorance thing, but perhaps maybe not really turning a blind eye, but maybe keeping it in the background and really just focusing on my education.
Well, and it sounds like then if that's true, that the professors at Parkside, your professors certainly have done an admirable job of doing all they can to continue to provide as fine an education as they possibly can.
Yeah, and I think that's where it goes to is the faculty and the staff kind of working with it and moving past it and saying, hey, this is for the students, this is why we're here, so we do need to continue. So
as you look ahead then, what kind of difference do you think this particular education has made for you? I mean, what are some of the specific ways in which you are not the same Tyler Farrell that you were 4 years ago?
I would say that one of the best things has been the diverse community of Parkside. And really, kind of jumping into that community has changed me for sure. I mean, I think that's one of the biggest things is being in that community and meeting so many new people with a lot of different interests and a lot of different ideas, I think is one of the biggest things that has changed me. And I usually always say it, when you're sitting in a classroom at Parkside, a lot of the times you're not just sitting with a bunch of people the exact same age as you doing the exact same thing. You're sitting with, military veterans. You're sitting with mothers. You're sitting with peers who are working three jobs and living in an apartment by themselves. You're not just sitting there with a bunch of, kind of like blank faced students who are all the exact same. It's a super diverse community. And then you not only get the experience of the professor who's actually teaching the class, but then you get all the experience from the students, the diverse students, who are sitting there taking the class with you.
The couple of times that I've had short teaching stints at UW-Parkside, I have had exactly the same experience and thought that was one of the best things about the place was the fact that it draws this remarkable diversity of students and that only makes the place stronger. In the minute or so that remains, explain this Chancellor's Award, how it came to you.
So the Chancellor's Award, I guess it starts off as the department, the department nominates you. And so I did get a nomination from both geography and economics. And then from that, I had to write kind of like a student statement, if you will, and that got submitted to a committee, to a board of committee. And then they would select the outstanding graduates, and then, to my knowledge, then the chancellor then handpicks one of the outstanding graduates as the chancellor's award. And it is more than just a kind of like a straight-up GPA thing. It's not just all academics. The chancellor's award is supposed to be more than that and kind of expanding beyond that just academic standard and going into being involved in the community and the campus and stuff like that.
Well, I think they've chosen well. And Tyler Farrell, we congratulate you on, first of all, successfully completing this gauntlet of a double major at UW-Parkside and receiving this prestigious Chancellor's Award. And we wish you well with everything that stretches ahead for you. And I'm glad you could join us today on The Morning Show.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Tyler Farrell, Chancellor Award winner at the University of Wisconsin-Parkside. When is graduation?
This Saturday, actually.
Well, enjoy the party. And it was great to meet you on today's Morning Show.
Thank you.
We remind you that The Morning Show airs every weekday morning and is archived at our website, WGTD.org. Support for The Morning Show comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, a unique shopping experience.